Morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order, January 27, 2022. With me today is co-chair Senator Bishop, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Olson, Senator Wilikowski, Senator Wilson, Senator Hoffman. On the agenda today, we're going to have a presentation to the committee from the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. We have, it'll be online, so we'll work through that system as we deal with COVID and other issues like that. But here today to present online is Mr. Steve Williams, the CEO, and Anita Halterman, board chair. And I'd like you to go ahead and introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and take us through the presentation. What I'll have you do is we'll follow the standard procedure here. We'll let you do your slide, and then just pause for a second just to see if I flag you. If there's questions, and if there's no questions, we'll just move on. I'll watch the clock. And the committee, we have 2 hours, and we should have plenty of time for this presentation and questions from the Mental Health Trust Authority. So with that, if you could give us an update, and don't forget to cover in your process your real estate portion of your portfolio.
Thank you, Senator Stedman and the committee, Finance Committee. My name is Anita Marie Halterman. I am the new board chair for the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. I would like to recognize my fellow trustees. Rhonda Boyles is currently serving as our vice chair, and she is likely sitting in a conference room watching as we do this remotely. Brene Berner is with Program and Planning, and John Sturgeon, our Resource Management Committee Chair. Brent Fisher is our Secretary and Finance Committee Chair. Kevin Feynman is our Audit and Risk Chair. And Chris Cook is the former chair and is soon to be exiting our board as we get hopefully a new trustee to replace him. For more than 27 years, the trust has been administering the Alaska Mental Health Trust, a perpetual trust, to improve the lives of our beneficiaries. Alaska is fortunate to have a self-funded organization that supports state, local, and non-governmental partners in providing services and supports for vulnerable Alaskans. In the fiscal year of 2021, the trust awarded more than $21.3 million in grants to partners that helped improve the lives of trust beneficiaries around the state. I'd like to acknowledge and thank all of those who have played a part in the formation of our unique state agency. It would be wonderful if every state had a mental health trust authority. I'd like to acknowledge and thank all of the partners who played a part in the formation of this agency. We are fortunate that the trust is a supporting funder of system change involving improvements that help implement a comprehensive mental health program in this state. The role that the trust plays in supporting efforts to provide funding and support for programs that improve the lives of our beneficiaries is evident. This work is demonstrated through the trust's recent efforts to enhance the continuum of care through our improvement to Alaska's behavioral health crisis response system, and through our ongoing communication efforts aimed at reducing the stigma experienced by our beneficiaries. Our standing trust focus areas and priorities recognize the need to improve and maximize the systems that serve our beneficiaries, and we continue to make progress as we engage with partners who are addressing homelessness, providing addiction services, treatment services, and working to reduce recidivism, and they are working in many ways to improve the lives of our trust beneficiaries. How do we support this work? We do that through financial management and strategic management of our trust land assets. These efforts have placed the trust in a strong financial position, and I'd like to acknowledge my fellow trustees and the trust staff for their continued efforts in managing our trust cash and non-cash assets in a manner that supports our trust beneficiaries for today and tomorrow. And while we know that this year brought some challenges, despite that, the trust made significant progress. We have finalized a major land exchange in Southeast Alaska that provided new opportunities to generate revenue for the trust. We underwent a productive legislative audit. We experienced record gains in our financial assets, and we made significant progress in implementing improvements in the way that Alaska responds to those experiencing psychiatric crisis. Before I close, I'd like to thank the committee members for this opportunity to update you on our budget, our finances, and the work of the trust beneficiaries. I'd also like to publicly thank our partners throughout Alaska who are applying their energy and expertise every day to improving the beneficiary outcomes. It is likely that every Alaskan has experienced some behavioral health challenges that our trust beneficiaries experience. Personally, my family has been impacted, so this work is particularly meaningful for me. I am grateful to serve as the chair of this board of a very important organization. I'd like to introduce Steve Williams, our new trust CEO. Steve was selected by the Board of Trustees following a rigorous recruitment and interview process, and my fellow trustees and I are excited to have him in this new role. Steve has been with the trust for 16 years. 8 of those years, he served as our organization's chief operating officer. He is committed to our trust beneficiaries, and he brings his leadership skills and his passion about the organization and the mission to his position. In his role as CEO, Steve oversees the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority and the trust land offices. We know that Steve is going to do great things. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we're going to get on to the presentation, or we're going to run out of time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Steve Williams, the Chief Executive Officer of the Alaska Mental Health Trust. If we could go to slide 3, that would be great. We appreciate the opportunity to present the Trust's FY23 budget spending and recommendations of state general funds. We're going to go into a little bit of our information about the legislative audit that was just completed, and then I'd like to close a little bit with some of the activities of the Trust Land Office and an important arm of the Trust that generates revenue for our beneficiaries. Slide 3 gives the committee a sense of who our beneficiaries are. Beneficiaries are Alaskan youth and adults who experience one or more of the health conditions listed below. We estimate that there's probably 1 in 10 Alaskans that experience one or more of these health conditions that would qualify them as a trust beneficiary. Slide 4, please. Mr. Chair, may I go forward?
Yes, just I'll stop you for questions if somebody flags me.
Thank you. Slide 4, before we dive into the financial position of the trust and our FY23 budget recommendations, I wanted to provide a brief update on the recent audit that was completed in this past summer, July 2021. This audit was approved by the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee in March of 2020, and the focus of the audit was to follow up to ensure that the trust had taken actions related to the findings of the 2018 audit. I am pleased to report to the committee that the legislative auditor found the trust had successfully responded and took action on the findings of the 2018 audit. I am also pleased to report that the trust continues to operate under and uphold state statutes and the terms of the 1994 trust settlement agreement. In addition, as often is the case when we undergo an outside entity kind of looking at our operations, the legislative auditor provided some additional recommendations for things that could strengthen our operations. Recommendations that we appreciate and we are looking at and incorporating so that we can strengthen the organization, our operations, not only for today, but for future beneficiaries. On the slide, you'll see that there are 2 sub-bullets down at the bottom. Those are the sub-bullets that I would describe as the areas that the recommendations fell into. One of them was related to our commercial real estate and the other was strengthening some of our internal operating policies and procedures.
Okay, we have a question from Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and congratulations, Ms. Halterman and Mr. Williams, for your new positions. The 2018 audit was a controversial item on about the seven properties that were bought. Does the Mental Health Trust still own those properties? And what is net revenue sort of from those properties? Are those properties of sort of gaining revenue, or are they losing revenue? And just trying to understand. And from that, the new audit from 2021, those properties were not independently appraised. And did those properties get independently appraised as of today?
So, Mr. Williams, before you answer that, that question is going to fold into the presentation at some point in time. It may fit in later in your financial review rather than having us jump around. So would you like to answer it later in sequence with your slides or not?
Mr. Chair, I think that would be great. It'll come up actually in the next slide and maybe in a couple of other places.
Okay, so just factor in the answers to Senator Wilson's questions. You'll probably want to go into some detail on those issues, because clearly that's one of the issues here that we want to be briefed on, just the status of. So, other questions on slide four? Seeing none, we'll go on to slide five.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Slide five is a depiction of the trust's financial position from the start and inception in 1996 up to the close of fiscal year 21. On the far right-hand side. What you will see if you look across the slide is increased growth over time, with the exception of that period when we had a national economic downturn around 2008 to 2010. I'd like to focus on the far right, which is the fiscal position as of the close of FY21. That column, the lower blue section of the bar, represents the corpus of the trust, the principal of the trust, and that is at $498 million. Going up the column, the orange-colored section is our budget reserves at $268 million. And then the very top, the gray section of the column, is the real estate equity, $66 million. That brings us to a total at the close of FY21 of $832 million. I think it might be good here, Mr. Chair, to sort of touch base on some of the things that Senator Wilson just asked about. The trust does still retain seven commercial real estate properties, two in Anchorage, one in Washington, one in Utah, and three down in Texas. We have retained an independent real estate advisor, Harvest Capital Partners. They work with our asset managers over at the Trust Land Office to monitor and assess the value of our commercial real estate. And they then make recommendations at a minimum on an annual basis to our Board of Trustees as to when those properties should be sold or if they should be held. Those recommendations actually were presented to the board this past summer, and the recommendations at that point was that those properties be held. I'll stop there to see if that, I think that covered Senator Wilson's questions, but I'll pause.
So there's no, apparently there was not the ability then to work an agreement with the permanent fund to house and manage some of those assets. Can you give us a little update on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, as part of the considerations as to how to manage those commercial real estate properties, the trustees considered seven different recommendations, one of which was the one you just highlighted, was transferring the management of those properties over to the permanent fund, and in consultation with the permanent fund and then ultimately with our Board of Trustees, it was determined that the best way to manage those properties was through the use of an independent real estate advisor and our staff over at the Trust Land Office.
So was there concern of the quality of those assets not being of sufficient quality to be of interest to the permanent fund?
Mr. Chair, I don't know that there was a concern about the sufficient quality necessarily as much as it was that the management of seven independent real estate assets from the overall permanent fund portfolio was something that they currently were not structured to do.
Okay, I think we've had some different information, but Senator Wilson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess the question that I would have now is that your independent advisor asked you to retain these properties, but according to the audit, two of these properties were projected to have negative cash flows. Is that still the position today to hold those all seven properties?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, yes.
Okay. We have other questions? If you can get back to the committee on the status of each individual one of those properties and the cash flow positions of them, would be helpful.
Mr. Chair, we'd be happy to do that and submit that to you and to the committee.
Okay. Okay, we'll go on to the next slide, slide six.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Slide six, I'm now moving into our FY23 estimated trust available funding. On the left-hand table, you will see that the bottom line is that we're estimating an available trust funds of $37 million in FY23. We get to that by adding up the rows above. I will walk through each of those very quickly. I believe the committee is familiar how we calculate our available funding, but the row one is the $29 million represents 4.25% of the average of the prior year trust fund balances. Row two, the $2.8 million, is the average of the four prior years carry forward trust funds. Row three is the prior year, 4 year prior average of the Trust Land Office spendable income that they generate. And then row four is the previous four year average of interest earnings on our accounts. So that total brings us to the $37 million. We stress the word estimate because we won't know the actual available final balance or available funding until the close of FY22, which is in the middle of August. I included a table on the right for the committee to illustrate what our available funding has been for the previous five fiscal years. And the takeaway here is that in each of the fiscal years, there has been an increase. And we are anticipating that increase from 22 to 23 to be about $1.5 million. I think this demonstrates that the trust again is in a strong financial position, and we look forward to this level of anticipated growth in the near and foreseeable future.
If you could remind the committee the budgetary issue last year we faced with the request in the submitted budget compared to the enacted budget dealing with your reserves.
Mr. Chair, I will respond really quickly, but I think we'll touch on that on a later slide.
That's fine. We can postpone the question until it fits into your presentation, but I want to make sure we cover that.
Yes, I will make sure we cover that, Mr. Chair.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under the Land Office spendable income, can you remind the committee how the Mental Health Trust determines the amount of spendable income from the Land Office?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, the way we calculate spendable income versus principal income that is generated from the Trust Land Office and the revenues off of our lands is outlined in statute and regulation.
Can you define that again and remind the committee of what that is?
I can get back to you with the specifics, but as an example, in terms of our timber resources, 85% of that, I believe, goes to principal, and 15% of those revenues go to spendable income.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And you could get back to the committee on further data on that and other questions that come along. We don't have an issue with that as long as we get a response. We would prefer that the response be accurate. So if there's questions on that, just feel free to ask us to get back to us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Do we have other questions on slide six? Slide six, we'll go on to slide seven.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Slide seven, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on, but this is a setup for how we get to our FY23 budget recommendations. This outlines our comprehensive and collaborative process that we actually embark on in late winter, early spring each year with our partners. It culminates at the end of the summer where staff presents a set of budget recommendations to our Board of Trustees for approval. Upon approval, then by statute, we submit those recommendations, which includes not only approved trust funding, but also recommendations for the expenditure of state general funds as it relates to our beneficiaries and the Comprehensive Integrated Mental Health Program Plan. That goes to the administration as well as to the legislature by September 15th.
Any questions on that? Okay, next slide.
Slide eight is a illustration of the FY23 trust spending as approved by our Board of Trustees. This is a high-level overview. It, as the slide suggests, it falls into three buckets. Our agency budgets, which in the top right quadrant is split into two. The trust authority, which is housed within the Department of Revenue, and the trust land office, which is housed within the Department of Natural Resources. Each of those arms of the trust have an agency budget. The trust authority for FY23 is trustee approved at $4.3 million, and for the trust land office, the agency budget is $4.8 million. These agency budgets are supporting the activities in each of the offices for their respective responsibilities to forward the mission of the trust. Our program staff on the trust authority side spend a significant amount of their time forwarding initiatives that have been identified by our Board of Trustees, things like working on housing and homelessness, the intersection of behavioral health and criminal justice, and most recently our effort with the Department of Health and Social Services to transform our behavioral health crisis system of care. And I'll speak a little bit more to that later. As you move down the green section of the pie, MTAR, those are trustee-approved mental health trust authority authorized receipts. These are trust funds that are included in the FY23 budget. These are approved funds to different state department and agencies for specific purposes and specific programs. And for FY23, there is $8.5 million of trust funds in the state budget, and the committee will see those as we move through the budget process. When you see the acronym MTAR, you know that those are trust funds. And then the last section of the pie on the left-hand side, the blue section, are trust funds. Those are authority grants that the trustees have approved that we award out outside of the budget process. So these are grants that get made to community nonprofit organizations, local governments, tribal health organizations, all organizations that provide services and help us to improve the lives of our beneficiaries. I will pause there.
Any questions on the slide? Okay, next slide.
Mr. Chair, slide nine. This is our FY23 GFMH budget recommendations. These are the recommendations that were presented to the board and approved by the board. This slide illustrates the MTAR increments where there is a connection to our general fund mental health recommendations. So I just want to start by saying if you look down at the bottom of the first blue column, you'll see a total of $3.7 million of MTAR funding. That is a portion, roughly 43% or 44%, of the total MTAR FY23 that you will see in the budget. Remember that the total was 8.5 on the previous slide. What is depicted on this table and this slide is only the MTAR that is connected to a GF recommendation. The other MTAR increments are trust-funded programs and services within the state budget that we are solely funding. So the blue recommend is what the trustees approved and put forward to the administration and to the legislature. We are looking forward to continuing this conversation. Many of these increments are, GF increments are important to improving the system of care. As you move over to the right, you will see the what the governor included in his proposed FY23 budget. And what you will note here that is different, and this speaks to your previous question, Mr. Chair, than last year, is first that the governor included all of the general fund, the trustee approved general fund mental health budget recommendations in his budget. There were two slight reductions in his recommendations related to AHFC receipts down at the bottom. If you looked at the special needs housing grant and the housing assistance, you will see that there are very slight reductions there. In our conversations with the folks over at AHFC, we don't anticipate those reductions having any significant impact on either the programs or the recipients of those programs in FY23. Previously, last year, when we presented this slide to the committee, there was a column in there called trust reserves. And at that time, the governor's proposed budget had included a set of uses of trust reserves that had not been communicated to the trust nor approved by the Board of Trustees. I'm happy to say that this year that's not the case, and I do believe that that is reflective of our work to have improved conversations with the administration and Office of Management and Budget so that they understand the priorities of the trust moving into the new fiscal year. And we were able to get information from the Office of Management and Budget and the governor's office on some of the priorities that they would be looking for the trust to help them with. And as an example, that very last row, AHFC Senior Housing Pre-Development, that was something that the administration presented to our Board of Trustees. They considered that recommendation and included that in their overall set of FY23 GFMH recommendations. I will pause there.
Okay, on your, before I get to the question of Senator Von Imhoff, I want you to clarify your transfer protocol to your principal portion of your trust. That was the issue last year, as I recall, in the budget submission with the governor. And I'd like you to be a little clearer on that. When does the trust talk about transferring assets, if they've got a schedule set up now, and so forth?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The trust transfers our revenues into the principal or the corpus of the trust generally on a quarterly basis. Depending on the amount of funds that are generated. We've coordinated that with the Alaska Permanent Fund so that we're not sending over small increments over the course of a year, but sort of predictable larger transfers in a coordinated and calculated timeline.
So again, let's try to be a little clearer. This is a policy change from the previous years? Or not?
No, this is not a policy change, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So again, I'd like you to help me clarify the issue last year when there was a lot of discussion on the transfer to the principal and the trustees having not taken action to authorize that and building up the liquidity in the administration here, and the governor submitted a budget wanting to spend it and the trust arguing not to. And the concern, as I recall here, was having some orderly process to make those transfers so we don't have that type of a situation in the future. So you can help me with that?
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to follow up in writing with some clarification on that for you and the committee.
Right, because we spent some time on that in the budget process last year, and that's the clarification I'm after. But we'll let you get back to us on that. I'd like to have you include that in the, you know, when the board took action, what their current board policy is in the future for review, so we don't have accumulated assets that the board would like to transfer in a particular administration wanting to expense, so we can avoid that in the future. So if you could help us with that in your answer, that would or clarification of that would be helpful, because there was concern at the table that the transfers weren't taking place in a standardized time frame on review and led to that issue. And we were encouraging them, as I recall, to modify that policy and come up with a process that wouldn't happen again in the future. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So I just recall last year there was a conversation about API and the funding of API and where was the appropriate vehicle. I know that the governor had utilized some of the MTAR funds or just some of mental health trust funds, and that the mental health trust board had not approved that, and it was there was just some conflict. And I remember asking last year to the presenter, why doesn't the mental health fund API? I would think it would be a natural fit. I don't see it here on this list. Perhaps it's somewhere else in a different slide with a different pot of money. And for that matter, also the DSH funding, I think it's DISH funding. I know that at Fairbanks, for one, has utilized that money well in the past. So just those seems to be significant areas that I'd just be curious of the board's rationale of funding it or not funding it and why.
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, the trust does support API in a variety of different ways, and we have historically, very significantly actually, in most recent years when API was going through some of its challenges related to the disability law lawsuit against API. There, I believe in FY23, although you do not see it on this table because it's only reflecting the trust funds only reflect areas where there's a general fund recommendation as well. I do believe that in the FY23 budget, there is at least one sizable increment related to API, and I will get that back and confirm it with the committee in writing. I believe it's around $300,000.
Can you follow up?
Thank you. So $300,000, I thank you for that. It is a start. I think the governor last year was looking for more like $6 to $9 million or something. But, and I just see as the money continues to increase with your cash flow on slide six, going from $28 million in fiscal year 18 to almost a $10 million increase to $37 million in fiscal year 23, I'm well aware there's no shortage of priorities for any department. I understand the difficulty that you're in terms of the need versus the cash. I do hope, though, as the chair of the subcommittee for DHSS, Department of Health and Social Services, I do hope to have a robust conversation, perhaps during the subcommittee process, about the role of the Mental Health Trust on this important institution. Thank you.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are there any recommendations for additional funding for homelessness?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, our work related to homelessness is partially reflected in our partnership there with the AHFC, those two items, special needs housing grants and the housing assistance program. There are other trust-funded efforts that are focused on addressing homelessness. Much of our funds will go outside the state budget process directly to the organizations that are providing programs and services in the community to serve and address the needs of homelessness.
Follow up, Senator Wilkowski.
I'd like to see some more detail, either now or you can get it in writing, I guess, on that homeless housing assistance program.
Could you help the committee with that in your response? Get back to us in more detail on the homelessness issue and your policy and the funding.
Mr. Chair, we'd be happy to. Okay.
Next slide, please.
This next slide shows you the large areas of focus where our staff resources as well as trust funding resources are channeled. These are sort of overarching areas where we have a variety of strategies and activities to improve things, whether it's related to the criminal justice system, housing and homelessness. It gets to a little bit about Senator Wilkowski's question just a second ago. And then in the mental health and addiction intervention focus area, which I'm going to spend just two slides on later on, it will also sort of connect Senator von Himmelhoff's question about what the trust is doing and how's it using its resources to complement or assist API in addressing Alaskans who have a severe psychiatric crisis. The other two priorities are working on helping the community develop and maintain a skilled and competent workforce, and then working upstream related to early intervention with families and children so that we are intervening earlier before health conditions become more debilitating and or chronic.
Okay, we have a question from Senator Bishop.
Thank you and congratulations on your new position. Workforce development, just going back a page, on page 9 on your budget, I see we've got about $850,000 going to the university. Is that part of your workforce development initiative, and in what area is that in?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, that's exactly right. That is trust funding that's going to the University of Alaska Anchorage, the Center for Human Development. That is the Alaska Training Cooperative that we have been in partnership with the university on for several years. They provide ongoing training and skill development for targeting direct service professionals, but then also training to more professional or clinical staff as well.
Thank you.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under your established focus areas, the housing and home and community-based services, I wonder if you could provide my office with a list of communities throughout the state of Alaska and the amounts that are targeted for these areas so I can get a better understanding of how these are, how the state is being serviced on a, for my view, on an equitable basis. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. If you could get back to the committee on that, and we'll dispense it around on the geographical representation of some of the assistance. And I'd just like to make one other comment on the workforce development. I think we'll be spending some time this year and hopefully over the next few years on that very subject. We've got substantial federal monies coming in. We need to build up our workforce to be able to have a workforce to complete some of these projects. And I think we have a unique opportunity over the next several years to get some of our younger Alaskans trained up for the workforce. So as you guys look at the growth in your endowment and your revenue stream to facilitate some of these areas, it would be nice to keep an eye on the demands coming at the state for employment and the lack of training that we have from all aspects. And there would be a lot of trust beneficiaries, I would think, that would qualify for quite a few of these jobs if they had the skill set. I just thought I'd mention that issue to you, because we are going to be struggling over the next several years with the federal largesse that's coming our way. So we'll go on to the next slide, slide 11.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Slide 11 is just a sample of some authority grant projects that the trust has funded. These are projects that are outside of the state budget process and are not MTAR funds. We wanted to include these as just an example of the types of services that we fund out into the community that supports the overall state's health and comprehensive integrated mental health program. I'd just like to note those first two bullets, those grants, one was awarded in Anchorage, one was awarded in Fairbanks. Those are increasing access to residential treatment beds in each of those communities by 16. We anticipate that that gets us about halfway filled in terms of the gap and need. We're hoping that organizations, either these or others in those communities, might step forward to assist in filling that additional capacity. You'll notice the third bullet there is focused in the Massu Valley. This is increasing residential substance use treatment. And the SEPRI Alaska is targeting folks coming out of corrections who have either started a path to recovery or when they get out want to engage in a path of recovery so that they can become, they can address their mental health or addiction issues and move forward in their life as they've come out of a period of incarceration. The bottom three bullets, this goes a little bit to, I think, Senator Wilikowski's question earlier. These, the first bullet there is an example of trust funding that's going directly to an organization that is focused on addressing homelessness issues in Anchorage. Up in Fairbanks, the last bullet, a similar fund trust funding going to a nonprofit up in Fairbanks, again, addressing homelessness issues there. And that bullet is really targeting young families and adults who need access to the private rental market to be able to get a unit, as well as to, if needed, have access to the services and supports that they might need so that they can maintain that housing and not fall back into or be at risk of falling back into a homelessness status.
Okay, before we go to Senator Hoffman, could you elaborate a little bit on the grant to Southeast? This is a center hub in Juneau. Is it just in Juneau, and how do you propose to deal with the issues in the other islands, although Juneau's not an island, almost an island?
Mr. Chair, that item, you all may be familiar, have heard of the Teal Center, which is a structure or a facility that's under construction out near the airport. They're literally across the parking lot from the Glory Hall, the new homeless shelter down there in Juneau. The trust is extremely excited about being able to support the Teal Center because within the Teal Center are going to be several nonprofit organizations sharing a space. And those organizations provide direct services and referral to services for our beneficiaries. And many of those services are services that the homeless population that is being served by the Glory Hall needs to access to be able to move out of that particular homelessness status.
Okay, so right before we go to Senator Hoffman, so my constituents that are homeless, I should send them to Juneau?
No, Mr. Chair, you should not send them to Juneau. This is a grant. The reason the trust is made this grant directly to this particular facility is because it received a grant request or an application to assist with addressing the coordinating the service organizations in Juneau to be more efficient, as well as being able to provide services to folks in Juneau. And I believe SAIL, which many of you may be familiar with, also does services not just in Juneau, but in other locations around the Southeast region.
Okay, I just want to remind you just to try to look beyond the hubs. It's difficult, especially in the islands down here, for people to move around. We don't have a very fluid marine highway system, which is was used pretty heavily for the general public moving around, so it's difficult, and just kind of keep that in mind. There's almost the same distance between here and Ketchikan as there is between Anchorage and Fairbanks.
Not Thank quite, you, Mr. Chair.
But it's a significant hurdle. You can't just walk by any means. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you,
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My focal point is expanding upon your issue in Southeast, but mine is throughout the state of Alaska. We see $1.4 million being spent here targeting urban Alaska. And I know homelessness exists throughout the state of Alaska. I'm wondering, how are you assisting the rest of the state of Alaska off of the road system, homelessness in particularly in northern and western Alaska, where temperatures are many times well below zero? How are you assisting those communities that I think where homelessness exists is probably more critical to their health, life, and safety? I know it's a difficult question, difficult issue to address because of the vast number of communities in rural Alaska, but nonetheless, the problem exists. And I'm wondering how the Mental Health Trust Authority addresses this issue, if at all.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I appreciate that question, and I appreciate the previous question or comments from the chair. I want to start off by just stating that the trust as an organization is responsible for beneficiaries throughout the state. And although you may see this sample of products may seem to be focused on urban communities, we do focus resources, both staff and financial, in other areas around the state. I'm sorry that Senator Olson isn't in the room right now, but to address your question about Western Alaska and Northern Alaska as it relates to homelessness, the trust does provide, has provided funding in Bethel to the Winter House to help establish and get the homelessness shelter out in Bethel up and operating. And then up in Nome, I don't know that we're providing financial support right now, but previously, in previous years, we helped to establish a homelessness shelter up in Nome as well. I recognize that, you know, those are just two projects and they aren't necessarily addressing the full need of the complications and the variables that cause someone to get into a homelessness status, but those are just two off the top of my head that I could give as an example, and we will follow up with some additional information as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I might continue,
yes.
I appreciate those sub-regional hubs, you know, and there are many sub-regional hubs in the state of Alaska, but we have probably 150 to 200 communities from Narvik to Eek to Hooper Bay to Scammon Bay. There are virtually hundreds of communities in the state of Alaska, and I know there's entities in each one of those that are trying to address numerous issues, but one of them is homelessness, and I'm wondering, I would request the board if they could look at that, if they can come up and address homelessness in the smallest communities that are not urban areas, not regional hubs like Nome and Bethel, but I'd say in rural Alaska, probably 50% of those are in smaller communities from 300 to 1,500 in population. I know they have homelessness there, and primarily those communities are the ones that probably have the least financial assets to address homelessness, but they are, because of their distance and their proximity, it's hard to for the board to look that far and see that homelessness exists. So I'd request that, because they are, in my view, they are being forgotten by the Mental Health Trust, and they live in some of the harshest environments in Alaska. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Williams, does the Does the trust look at grantees in terms of evaluating effectiveness or auditing some of your grants that you give? As you know, I look at your grantee list. I know a couple of agencies that have major Medicaid fraud that has been found by the Department of Health and Human Services, and another grantee is currently under investigation by the Muni of Anchorage for misappropriation of funds. Does the Mental Health Trust look at grantees in terms of auditing their use of funds? And if so, has the trust ever asked for funds to be returned or other legal action taken against those grantees?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, the trust does, when we receive a application from a community organization, we look at their nonprofit status, we look at their standing within the nonprofit status, and make sure that before we would bring a request to the board or eventually making a grant award to the organizations, that they're in good standing. We then, on the sort of outcomes side of the equation, all of our grants require financial reporting on how the grant was used, and then also program reporting on outcomes that they followed through with the performance measures outlined in our grant agreements, and demonstrated the results that we had hoped that they would achieve. And I would say that if there was a situation that either an organization wasn't following up and meeting those expectations, that yes, that would be taken into consideration for any new grant request or award of the trust.
I guess as a follow-up,
Mr. Chair. Follow-up.
So has the Mental Health Trust in recent years sort of revoked anyone's status for funds that were submitted due to misappropriation of funds in recent years?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I would have to go back and look at our grants and connect with our grants administration staff and to answer that question.
Okay, if you can get back to the committee on that, that would be appreciated. Other questions on slide 11? Okay, we'll speed on to slide 12.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next two slides are ways that the Trust and the Department of Health and Social Services are looking to transform Alaska's behavioral health crisis system of care. As we know, currently the default response primarily to someone in the community in a behavioral health crisis tends to be either a law enforcement response or an EMS response that generally results in someone being either transported to a hospital emergency room where they may get some immediate care, or a jail. And we know that that is not the best response for the system from a cost and allocation of resources, nor is it, more importantly, the best response for the individual to achieve and resolve their crisis, as well as to help ensure they're stable when they return to the community. We are using the Crisis Now framework, which is outlined below, and those four components are a part of the framework. What I would say the takeaway for the committee here as you're looking at this is that there are opportunities when someone is in a behavioral health crisis to intervene at lower levels of care in a real-time access. And then if someone needs a higher level of care, you move up through that continuum instead of starting high and hoping to be able to move down. This will have and should have an impact on the Alaska Psychiatric Institute, as well as the hospitals that are DES-DET, to ensure that the individuals at that level of care are the individuals that need that level of care, and maybe can accommodate it for a longer period of time, as opposed to just resolving an immediate crisis and then discharging that individual back to his or her home community.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Williams, is this the model that Mr. Abbott, your predecessor, was telling us about that I think the state of Arizona was implementing? And is this program? That's the first question. The second question is, I believe I heard you say that you're interfacing with law enforcement. I'm just asking, is that up to local and include the APD, Alaska State Troopers, excuse me, and to work with Alaska State Troopers to interface in a emergency situation, even in rural Alaska, where there is maybe no mental health provider, that you could provide some help to talk down a individual so it doesn't turn into a more serious situation.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, the first question, the answer is yes. This is the model that my predecessor was presenting to the committee on last year and probably the year or two before that. Mr. Chair, I think if I can answer the follow-up questions on the next slide, I'd be happy to do that. I think it'll get directly to what Senator Bishop was asking.
Yeah, that's fine. Other questions on slide 12 before we go on to slide 13? Okay, go ahead and go to slide 13 and present the slide and then wrap in Senator Bishop's question in that, please.
Yep, thank you, Mr. Chair. So this second slide speaks to sort of the current efforts and where we are working with our partners across the state. I want to talk about the stakeholders. You've heard me mention the Department of Health and Social Services, but to Senator Bishop, we also are actively engaged in this transformative initiative with the Alaska State Troopers, with local law enforcement, the Fairbanks Police Department, the Anchorage Police Department, the local law enforcement agencies out in the valley, as well as down in Juneau. We are working with representatives in rural Alaska to look at how this model could be adapted into areas like Nome, like Ketchikan, like Kotzebue. Although there are only four communities listed here, these are the communities that have been engaged and are in the planning and implementation process. The other communities, we are in the discussions and the developmental stages, I would say. I would also just note for the committee and anyone who might be listening, when we talk about stakeholders and stakeholder involvement in transforming the system, it includes individuals that have either been in a behavioral health crisis and then had to use the existing system to address their needs, or family members who have had an individual in a behavioral health crisis who have then used the current system, as well as our advocates, the Alaska chapter of NAMI, our NAMI affiliates in state in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau, the Alaska Mental Health Board, which is statutory advisor to the trust. All of these different parties and many others, tribal health organizations, could go down the laundry list. What I want to convey here is to transform the system the way we are envisioning it requires multiple stakeholders who touch that system in different ways to be able to come together and move the system. No one entity is going to be able to transform the existing system under its own resources or under its own capacity. What I'd like to highlight over on the right-hand side, Mr. Chair, and this will again, I'll get a little bit to Senator Bishop. Those are some examples of recent trust investment in this initiative. The total is about $2 million of trust investment. All of those funds are funds that we're directly granting to the organizations in those communities. I'd like to highlight the second row, which is the Fairbanks Mobile Crisis Team. This is a piece of that, the component of the model, and maybe if we could just flip back to the next previous slide real quick. You'll see that that is the second component following the call center. That is, if a call center can't respond or resolve the individual's crisis on the phone, they can dispatch a mobile crisis team. And if we go back to slide 13, a mobile crisis team is made up of a mental health clinician or professional, as well as a peer, someone with lived experience. Fairbanks has been operating a mobile crisis team. They started in November with a modified schedule. In December, they went 24/7 and are operating in Fairbanks, in the city of Fairbanks, and I think their perimeter extends out a little bit towards the campus of UAF. But in December, they responded to 40 calls that represented 23 individuals. They were able to respond to those calls and resolve 29 of those 40 calls without any other intervention. No law enforcement, no EMS, no transport to the hospital emergency room. That is the type of outcomes that we're hoping to achieve throughout the state so that individuals get immediate access to their crisis. They aren't immediately pushed into these higher levels of care that may or may not be able to address their needs. And we are hopeful that this is the sort of transformative outcomes that we are going to achieve throughout the state. The last bullet on the left-hand side represents a piece of legislation that the governor introduced last session that is critical to making sure that this system is a no-wrong-door approach and that people have the opportunity, if they need, to be taken into a protective custody status and delivered to a 23-hour crisis stabilization center, they can, and they can receive the care there from the mental health professionals and medical staff as well. Senator Wilson, I believe, there was one hearing on SB 124 last session, and we're looking forward to continuing these conversations this session.
All right.
Overall, the trust is has invested roughly $7 million of its funding into this initiative. Trustees have approved another $4.5 million into this initiative in 23, and we look forward to continuing to transform the system. I'll pause there.
Okay, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I pointed out on page slide 11, there was $1.4 million going to Urban Alaska. Now we have the crisis now and the trust's investment. Now we have an additional $2 million, but it also excludes Southeast. And all of these $2 million are going to urban areas of the state. Again, crisis exists throughout the state of Alaska, and it seems as though, even though dollars are tight, the trustees need to have a broader view of the problems in the state of Alaska because crises exist. I discussed this issue with Senator Olson. There was a major shootout in Norvik this last year that resulted, I believe, in a death. But the problems exist throughout the state of Alaska. And when we are investing $3.5 million in these two categories and virtually giving a blind eye to the rest of the state, it gives me great pause that rural Alaska is an afterthought, and maybe not even an afterthought. It's being completely ignored, and I would challenge you as the new director and the board to look at issues on a broader scale. You know, I think that just a little bit of attention on these critical issues that face the state of Alaska, we need to have a broader brush, even though it may not adequately address the issue. I'm not criticizing the fact that there are problems in urban areas and these dollars may be well spent, but I'm saying that it appears to me in a cursory review that there's a great imbalance from what is being recommended in these two categories for the state of Alaska and the citizens that should be served by all the citizens being served as much as possible by the trust. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for that opportunity. I want to echo what Senator Hoffman says. I guess I'm sure that you, as a fresh blood coming into the system, are have plans for places other than the road system. What are your plans, and what do you have going on as what might be happening here that we can look forward to as people to try and give those that are mentally health challenged an opportunity to go ahead and have this programs like that available?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, at first I wanted to just state that we are looking at rural Alaska as we're talking about this initiative. Although there may not be a dollar investment that you're seeing on this sheet right here, I can assure you that staff resources are being used to communicate with Norton Sound, with Manialuk, with Ketchikan, to actually start these conversations about transforming that system in those locales, recognizing that the model isn't something that we're going to be able just to pick up and drop into a rural hub. And our hope is that as we have these conversations, that that will lead to a plan where the trust can invest its resources to transform the system in those other regions of the state. And ultimately lead to better outcomes than the outcomes that are currently, the negative outcomes we currently see throughout the state and in rural communities.
Last question, Mr. Chairman. It has to do with this slide up there. We see $2 million on the right-hand side, roughly, that are being used as an investment. What are the ongoing costs to keep these programs up and running for the clinical staff as well as the operating expenses for something that's already been set up?
Through the chair to Senator Olson, I don't have the ongoing operating costs associated with this. These are trust funds, as often we've shared with the committee and others. We use our funding to start up a program and demonstrate its effectiveness and then work towards how do we translate this into an ongoing integrated piece of the system. And we will be doing that with these organizations going forward. I anticipate that some of these services will be able to be, the revenues will be able to be generated through revenue. I don't know that they will be generated through Medicaid. I don't know that they will be able to cover the total operational costs through Medicaid, but certainly that will be a large portion of them.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay.
We have another, let's, I think Senator Wilson has another question, then we'll get to Senator down the line as we go on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Williams, earlier you talked about Fairbanks and their crisis mobilization team, and they're diverting about half their calls with no further intervention. Do you have an estimated cost savings either to the communities, to Medicaid, on those diversions that crisis mobile team were able to prevent?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, we do not have that information at the time. This has just started. It's been operating a month, but those are the types of things that we will be looking at in addition to the outcomes for the individual itself. I mean, the one thing I think we can say from what I reported, which was 40 calls where a mobile crisis team responded and there was no law enforcement engagement, there's a good reallocation of that resource to the intended for the intended purpose that the communities typically think of when it comes to law enforcement, which is responding to crimes and other public safety events.
Thank you.
Other questions? Senator Hoffman, did you have a follow-up question?
Well, I guess I do. I think that when you're talking about services, communications with Manialuk, Norton Sound, Yukon Customer Health Corporation and others, it would seem to me that the potential model that you're talking about from Fairbanks, Anchorage, or Juneau probably won't fit. And it would be, I think it would be advisable to set up a demonstration project out in one of these areas and through a competitive grant for one of them to design their system from the ground up and put some dollars there in both of those, the categories that we have. Instead of communicating with them, let's if the interest is there, put your money where your mouth is. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Okay, any other questions on slide 13? We'll go to slide 14.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next two slides are related to the Trust Land Office, the other arm of the trust, an important arm. For the record, I know this is probably everyone is aware of it, but the Trust Land Office operates under the Department of Natural Resources. Justy Warner is the executive director, and she is an excellent staff of underneath her that are charged with managing the trust's million acres of land with several different asset classes across those lands to generate, for the sole purpose of generating revenue for the trust that can then be distributed to improve programs and services for our beneficiaries. The highlights on the left-hand side there are just a couple of areas that the Trust Land Office over the last year has achieved. They, in terms of land sales, what I'm referring to there is the selected parcels that we put out for a public auction, as well as for the over-the-counter sale of any individual parcel of trust land. They generated roughly around $3.2 million of revenue for the trust. The second bullet there, the subdivision platting, I bring this up to the committee as it relates to revenue generation. Many of our parcels, if you were to look at a map of trust lands, are large parcels of lands. And in select parcels, subdividing them makes sense to be able to make them more accessible to individual Alaskans and to generate further revenue from those lands for the trust. So we've been in the process of doing some platting of subdivision work in Petersburg, in Sterling, in Homer, Nikiski, and a couple other communities around the state. And then the last bullet there, the Icy Cape development, that is a mineral development process that we're currently doing our due diligence to determine whether those minerals could be developed. It's a parcel south of Yakutat, about 75 miles south, and we are encouraged in the continued work to assess how to best use those lands to generate revenue for the trust. And then on the far right-hand side there, Mr. Chair and Committee, those are the different sort of asset classes that the Trust Land Office is managing off of our lands with the anticipated revenues generated, both spendable and principal income, which will get me back to that response that I'll provide to the committee in writing so that you can see the split out. But I just wanted to illustrate that what that demonstrates to the committee is that our lands are diverse and we have opportunities to generate revenue in different ways off of those lands into the future.
We have a question from Senator Von Imhoff.
Nope.
Well, I've got one. Icy Cape development, there was concern in the past of how that was being cash flowed, and did it comply with the trust settlement agreement? Can you elaborate on that status of that development and how that issue is being resolved or not resolved?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I believe you are referring to the use of trust principal in that development, which was a part of the findings in the 2018 financial audit report. And I believe I'm happy, pleased to report and remind the committee and others that we addressed that issue and the trustees authorized a transfer into the principal of trust income to compensate for the previous uses of principal for that were invested into the development of this project.
Okay, so that issue has been resolved then, is that correct?
Through the chair, yes.
Yeah, good. And then on the timber sales, looking forward, how much timberland does the trust have left in inventory to rotate its timber harvest through or what have you? What's the status of that?
Mr. Chair, if we could go to the next slide.
Next slide. Okay, well, we'll wait till the next slide where you can go into that. That's fine.
Yeah, I wanted to address your question using this slide because I think it helps. I will have
We'll wait till the next slide. We have other questions on slide 14. Okay, we'll go to the next one, and you could pick up the timber question in detail on this slide.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This slide addresses a partial response to your question. We are pleased to report that the longstanding process of trying to finalize an exchange of trust lands with U.S. forest lands has been completed. This was a process that started back in 2005, and was the outcome of this is the result of many different parties coming together to address how to use lands in Southeast, both for to preserve lands and view sheds for the public and other public uses, as well as to be able to generate revenue from U.S. forest lands for the trust for revenue. And after more than a decade with local communities, local governments, many different stakeholders, the legislature, our federal delegation, we have finalized this exchange. The parcels that are sub-bulleted there in the middle of the page, Hollis, Nocatee, Shelter Cove, those are parcels that were, or lands that were transferred to the trust on Prince of Wales Island, and then Shelter Cove is in the upper George Inlet down behind Ketchikan and Saxman. We're anticipating that the trust is going to be able to generate between $25 and $30 million of revenue over the next 10 years from these lands. It's also going to help the economies in Southeast in regards to a stable employment and an opportunity for sustained economic revenue. So I will have to get you from the Trust Land Office, and I'll ask our executive director to give you the total acreage of trust lands that have timber on them as a timber resource. But this is something that I wanted to highlight. And Senator Stedman, I also just wanted to thank you, because as a piece of this exchange, for it to have happened, there was a key piece of state legislation back in 2017 that was critical to getting us to this point. So I appreciate your sponsorship of that bill.
Well, thank you for that. But I guess the question is, I recognize that the trust or the land exchange has been completed, and I'm under the impression that a lot of the timberland is going to be monetized by a 10-year contract or so for harvest. But what I'm curious about is what's next after that, and maybe it's best to have the timber guys in your department get back to the finance committee. After these 10-year contracts, what's the supply out in the future for the next 20, 30 years? A lot of times, there's always a concern that on the length of the fiber supply, the ability that the contractor has to amortize his or her investment, and then thereby being able to secure a credit to go forward. So I'm kind of curious on that, and then on the also have them address the size of some of the opportunities, because some of the smaller folks with little sawmills or what have you also need fiber supply. So if you can get back to the committee on that, that would be very beneficial. Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Williams, do you guys have any other land swap deals in the works coming up?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, there are opportunities, I believe, that are being considered, but I don't think we have anything active. Again, I will defer to and get the information from the executive director of the land office with a direct response.
We'll have the land office get back, but there is one parcel up in the Shelter Cove Arena looking at transferring state lands to the mental health to facilitate some timber extraction and recreation development. I think that's in a potential piece of legislation, but the short answer to that, Senator Wilson, is yes, there is. And there may be more that I'm unaware of, so we'll have the land office. The land office could get back to us on the status, and please include the interest in the exchange for state land to mental health land in the Shelter Cove area. At some point, we'll have it at the committee, I would think, for review. Senator Wilson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I have another request for the land office, if Ms. Williams does not have the answer. In my district in Meadow Lakes, there's a gravel pit that the Mental Health Trust wanted to lease for gravel extraction. It went through the process through our local borough. The community of Meadow Lakes won their case not to have that gravel pit, but the Mental Health Trust is now filing suit against that judgment. And just wondering why, you know, the question comes from the community is why does the Mental Health Trust want to pursue this lawsuit against the will of the community?
Okay. Mr. Williams, if you can help Senator Wilson with that, or you may want to get back to the committee, it's, or both.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, we will get back to the committee. I don't want to provide inaccurate information.
Okay, thank you. That's perfectly fine. We'll wait for your response. We have other questions on slide 15. Okay, speeding along to slide 16.
Through the chair, or to the chair, this is our closing slide. And if I might just go back to your response to Senator Wilson's question about potential land transfers in the works, your exchange reminded me that the governor, when we were going through our budget process, did ask the Trust Land Office as one of the requests to identify different state lands or parcels that could be transferred over to the trust. And we did respond with a number of different parcels that could be transferred. The status of those is there's no movement on those at this point, but I guess that's the opportunity that I was describing to the committee. In closing, I'd just like to leave the committee with the understanding that the trust is in a strong leadership position, both at the board level, the trust authority staff level, and at the trust land office level. We're in a strong financial position, and we have strong partnerships not only with the legislature, but the executive branch agencies and the court system, and our community partners, the tribal health system, to really try to improve the lives of our beneficiaries and improve the systems of care that currently exist. Together, I think we will all be able to achieve some very positive impacts for the system and for our beneficiaries. And we appreciate your time this morning to share a little bit about that. And we look forward to working with this committee as we move forward with the budget process and the budget recommendations that we presented a few slides ago. So with that, Mr. Chair, our presentation is finished. Happy to answer any other questions.
Okay, Senator Hoffman and Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to thank you and the board for all the hard work that you do. You know, I was here in the legislature in the early 90s and probably at this table when we finalized the formation of the Mental Health Trust in 1994-1995 and had many hours of discussions with Jeff Jesse regarding what the trust would do. As many members realize with my dialogue today, my primary discussion as a representative from rural Alaska is the services that were going to be provided to rural Alaska. Today, some nearly 30 years later, the arguments that all the state of Alaska needs to be addressed on an equal basis needs to be reevaluated by the board, because that was the vision, that was the promise, that was the dialogue, that was the reasoning for the formation of the trust. It's a worthy cause, it's a well thought out piece of legislation, and they've done a tremendous job, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done by the board during all of their deliberations when they discuss any new programs, existing programs, on being equitable to all the citizens that should get the services that the trust provides. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Thank you for your service spanning two centuries. Senator Bishop.
Mr. Williams and Board Chair Halterman, my comments are going to dovetail right behind Senator Hoffman's, and I'm going to state it. You've heard for the last hour and a half where the gaps are, as we've identified them here in the state with what we know. And there's a common theme. It's outside of the urban centers and your major hubs. But with that being said, I agree with Senator Hoffman. My ask of the board is a question, and to you as the chairman, has the board ever done a needs analysis with all the stakeholders in the areas of mental health to see where the gaps are in the state of Alaska, urban and rural, and what would be the number of dollars required to fill those gaps? It's just a question, because obviously we've got gaps, we're doing good work, but it's not enough. But it would be curious to bring it back to the legislature and the finance table to see what that gap would be and how much it would cost.
Can you help Senator Bishop with that question? Mr. Williams?
Oh, my apologies, Mr. Chair. I thought you were directing that to Senator Bishop. A partial answer to your question is back, I believe, in 2015 or 14, we did a statewide analysis of the behavioral health system and where there were gaps in the service continuum. We refer back to that as we do our work moving forward. I don't remember off the top of my head whether there was a cost analysis associated to that, but that report is on our website, and I'm happy to include the link to that in the response to the committee with the other questions that were asked.
Okay, I'll thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll look up the report, and I appreciate it. Thank you. But I mean, that's something that I think that was almost coming on 10 years ago, and
yep.
It would be good to put a side by side comparison and do an analysis. What have you checked off the list, and where are the gaps still are at? I think that's a good project for the trustees.
We have other questions on the presentation today. Seeing none, I'd like to thank the CEO, Steve Williams, for coming forward, Anita Halterman, Board Chairman. This may conclude our budgetary meeting on the mental health, and it may not. The committee members, you have questions, get them to my office dealing with the operating budget on the mental health. I'll wait until after their response to the questions are delivered to the committee, and we disseminate them out amongst the members, and then we'll have appropriate time for committee members to formulate other questions and concerns or what have you. And depending on that level, we may or may not have another meeting. I would say the relative chance of another meeting is probably small. I think we'll probably be able to deal with the questions without another meeting, but we never know. So we'll wait for the responses back from mental health, then the issues, concerns delivered back to my office from committee members, and then we'll go from there. But this may very well conclude the operating budget presentation with mental health this year. With that, I'd like to thank everybody for coming today. There will be no meeting this afternoon. Next meeting will be tomorrow morning. Department of Revenue, savings accounts, reserves, and investment accounts. We're going to go over the cash position, which we've been monitoring very closely the last few years. That'll be at 9 a.m. And I will get with Senator Bishop on our forward schedules. And we've been running two meetings a day since the beginning. And we may be modifying that as we kind of move forward. What my concern is that if we stay on two meetings this early in the session, we're going to run into a burnout rate when we need to be fully in, you know, full speed ahead towards the last third of the session. So we want to kind of watch the workload, and we'll have those conversations amongst ourselves. Clearly, the two co-chairs would like to have some input from committee members on what they think is comfortable work speed also, because we need to, as all committee members and aides know, we have a lot of information we have to be able to put to memory and retain and instantly recall it to these meetings as the complexity continues to advance through the session. So with that, we are adjourned till 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.